Hey, this is Greg Vaughn, author of Second Darkness's Shadow in the Sky, and you are listening to The Tome with the Jeffs.
The Tome Show presents The Second Darkness, Shadow in the Sky. Welcome to The Tome Show Presents. I am your host, Jeffrey Wynn. In this series, we'll be examining The Second Darkness, the new adventure path from the folks at Pathfinder. I will be discussing each of the six adventure books with one of the authors who worked on them. And today I have with me Greg A. Vaughn, who is author of the first issue, Shadow in the Sky. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
All right. Now, this is the third Pathfinder adventure path. And since it's the first adventure, let's talk about beginnings. How far in advance do you have to start preparing these adventure paths? Because, you know, I mean, you must have started working on this one when Rise of the Rune Lords was not even finished yet.
Ordinarily, I like to start them well in advance. This one was a little different in that it was kind of a rush order. At the last minute, I only had about 2 months on this one. I had just finished writing Skeletons of Scarwall for the Crimson Throne adventure path, and James Jacobs was actually slated to write this chapter of Shadow or of Second Darkness. And Paizo was doing a big push to get a lot of product out in time for Gen Con, and he was just swamped. So he kind of asked me at the last minute if I'd be willing to jump in and write a low-level chapter of an adventure path for once, which was kind of nice because I've been writing the high level ones so long I get stat block disease from doing all that stuff. So it was nice to jump in and do a low level one for once. So this one didn't have as much lead in as I'd like.
Okay. So you joined the Second Darkness project rather late.
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you, what is Second Darkness about?
Second Darkness, at least, you know, it gets pretty convoluted through the whole adventure path, and my main focus was early on. But to me, Second Darkness is really about the re-emergence of the Drow on Golarion. It's really their first introduction into the Pathfinder world.
Yeah, this is very interesting because so far in Golarion, people, at least on the surface, who were not elves, didn't really know that the Drow existed. And so up until this point, if you were a player, you had to sort of pretend that you didn't know what a Drow was.
Well, yeah, at best, I guess it was kind of a boogeyman type of thing. Nobody had ever really seen one. The people who did know, which was mainly the high-up elves, just kind of kept quiet about it and pretended like they weren't around, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was largely unknown, I would say.
Yeah, from what I'm reading, not only are we finding out more about Drow in the Pathfinder campaign setting, but we're also finding out about regular elves. And elves in the Galarian seem pretty secretive and creepy.
Yes, yeah, that's one thing I love about Paizo and Galarian and the whole Pathfinder line is they're kind of reinventing everything. And they have reinvented elves in a big way. They're away from the kind of standard Tolkien-esque fey people that has been around and been the standby for years, and they've got a really dark edge to them.
I've noticed Pathfinder has been so far reinventing lots of concepts about Dungeons and Dragons. Are you nervous that you might reinvent things so much that they're no longer recognizable?
For me, no. For the overall Paizo line of stuff, I don't know. I mean, that would be in the domain of Eric and James. I think they've got a pretty good root in the traditional ways of things. I'm an old 1E kind of guy, so even when I'm working on reinventing stuff, I'm really looking at the oldest sources to try to kind of capture. A lot of times it's been lost, you know, over the last 20 years, we get away from the original stuff, and I try to kind of bring out some of the old versions of them. I tried so hard to get drow weapons that disintegrate in sunlight back into the game, but I think I've been overruled, at least to a large extent on that, by James and Eric, just from the game balance standpoint. But
So a lot of this reinventing is actually going back to the game's roots.
For the most part, and definitely from my standpoint, I mean that's kind of where my strength lies. There's a lot of creative guys writing for Paizo, so
Yeah,
you know
they're a
they
very
might
pro
go in different directions. I'm sorry,
Yeah,
go ahead.
Paizo's a very I'm yeah, no, I was stepping on your toes. Paizo's a very prolific bunch. I'm surprised at the sheer amount of products that they put out every month. Now you also wrote the article for Riddleport, which is the third major town in this region of Aresia. So far we've seen Magnemar, we've seen oh, help me. The other
Corvosa.
one. Yes, that one. And now we're seeing a Riddleport. Tell me about Riddleport. It's kind of a pirate city.
Yeah, Riddleport's interesting because James was supposed to write Riddleport too. And after I finished Shadow in the Sky and had kind of touched on some sites in Riddleport and the adventure, he basically said, "Hey, how would you like to go ahead and do Riddleport as well? Because I'm still pretty swamped." So it was another last-minute deal, but it's such a cool place. It's a pirate city. It's not a pirate city exactly like Freeport by Green Ronin and you know some of these other traditional pirate cities, because it's also got this the whole cipher gate thing. I call it the
Yeah, that's weird.
it's the cipher gate riddle is what I refer to it as throughout the adventure. Just that it's got this really strange investigative, you know, there's a lot of mages and stuff in Riddleport trying to figure this out, and mages and pirates don't necessarily mix that well. The guidance that James gave me was kind of look for a Lankmar type of field, where you've really got this cutthroat right beside this whole high magic type field, where any guy you meet on the street might be an assassin or might be an archmage ready to blast you type of thing.
Oh, that's really crazy. Now you mentioned Lankmar, Fritz Lieber's setting. What other inspirations did you draw upon for this for this setting?
For Riddleport, I did look at the Green Ronin stuff with Freeport, the old first edition adventures like Highport, which never got a whole lot of love from the early Slave Lord series, but it really had a nice feel to it, kind of an atmosphere about it that I wanted to kind of capture, though it's not exactly the same kind of city. It's not overrun by monsters and all that.
Right.
For the drow part, I really wanted to get back to the vault, so to speak. Just get these nasty drow that nobody's ever heard of really or seen before, and they're totally new and totally scary again, instead of just kind of being blasé like they've become.
Right. Modern drow have sort of been romanticized, kind of almost like vampires have received
Yeah.
the same treatment.
Absolutely.
And let's go back to the adventure that you wrote. This adventure, what happens without giving away any spoilers? What are the PCs going to be doing?
The PCs will find themselves thrust into the adventure by means of a big gambling tournament that's being held at a gambling hall in Riddleport. Riddleport started out as a cutthroat pirate town. It got these cipher mages in town and started giving it kind of an air of civility. And now one of the big industries is gambling, gaming, that sort of thing. It's almost kind of like a Las Vegas atmosphere to a certain extent. So there's this big gambling tournament, and
Right.
James and some of the other guys wrote the Second Darkness Companion, which gives great backstories for each PC to be there and why they're at this tournament. And as they're at the tournament, and you can really play it out as long as you want. Mike Selinker, who's a great game designer, actually designed a bunch of gambling games to be played.
Right, and they're in this book.
Yeah, they're in the book. So, you know, you can kind of skim over the gambling tournament, or if you got guys that like doing that, you can sit there for a few hours and run gambling games with your
And
characters.
you even there's an opportunity for the PCs to actually own the casino at one point and actually run it like a business, and you have rules for that.
Absolutely, yes. They kind of get hooked in with the casino as a result of some events that occurred during this gambling tournament, and by the end of the adventure, well, during the adventure, they can become part owners, and by the end of the adventure, they can own it outright. And you know, it's kind of some side income, plus it adds a whole new dimension of, hey, we can't just go out and smite the bad guys. I got a business to run here, type of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, another interesting thing about this casino is that the owner is Saul Van Casserkin, which is only interesting if you've read the other two Adventure Paths and you've met his two rather unfortunate sons.
Yes.
Is this sort of a big cosmic joke here in Pathfinder?
It may be. I'm not really sure how deep it goes. I know James Jacobs is the inventor of the Van Casserkin clan. They've got the hardest name to pronounce ever. It's hard enough to type, much less say. And
I
for
like
all
it.
I know, we're going to encounter a new Van Casserkin every adventure path, just
It'll
because
be like
they've got so many stories.
all the Cids in the Final Fantasy series or something.
Yeah,
So,
exactly.
kind of an in joke. Okay, that's really cool. Moving on from Pathfinder, you've worked on quite a number of other adventure paths. How many adventure paths have you worked on?
I guess five total. I did the last two adventure paths with Dungeon, and then, oh, I'm sorry, six, because I've done three with Pathfinder. I'm actually working on the fourth one with Pathfinder for the Legacy of Fire adventure path right now. So, yeah, six would be the total so far.
And you're working on you're working on the Scales of War adventure path
Okay, seven. You're right, I forgot. Yeah,
for the new
seven too.
Dungeon magazine. And I noticed you also have a writing credit for Forgotten Realms, the Scepter Tower of Spellguard. Is
Yes,
that correct?
that
So
is correct.
you've worked in third edition, and you've worked in fourth edition, and you've worked for Paizo, and you've worked for Wizards of the Coast now. Is there any you're a freelancer. Is there any difference in working with the two companies, how they approach dealing with you?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely differences. A lot of it comes down to in kind of the organization. Paizo is a much smaller group, so I would say I probably know the guys I work with at Paizo. Well, I have to say I know them a lot better. I mean, I know what they look like. I can pick them out of a crowd whenever I go to Gen Con. I hang out with them. I know a few of the guy at Wizards, but it's so much bigger. I tend to work with a different person every time. So I make a new acquaintance and all that, but I don't have the connection, I would say, with them. And I guess it's natural. It's a larger company, and they've got more projects going on at any one time. So it's kind of a
Certainly.
different feel from that, I'd say.
Would you say that the two companies have a different philosophy towards design?
Yeah, probably. Well, with the new Pathfinder RPG that Paizo's working on, that actually closes the gap I see between them. I would say early on, Paizo had very much an adventure type of mentality. Hey, we want to write cool adventures, cool scenarios for people to play. And Wizards, it seemed like for several years, had been more on the game design side. We want to write splat books, we want to write character classes, we want to write new rules. And they kind of just left the adventures up to the third party people for a while. Now, Wizards is definitely getting back into the adventure biz with fourth edition, and
Certainly.
Paizo is now doing their own rule set. So I would say they're maybe getting a little closer together, but that was the biggest difference in mindset that I always saw is Paizo's like, hey, let's go play a game, and Wizards is like, hey, let's go invent a game type of thing.
That's pretty interesting. Okay. Let's move on a little bit then. Now, since Shadow in the Sky opens up a new campaign, what advice would you give to DMs who are starting a new campaign, whether it's Second Darkness or their own campaign? What advice would you give for just a first adventure?
Well, for Second Darkness in particular, I'd say leave the paladins at home for once, because this one gets a little shady. You gotta sometimes get a little dirty in this one to win the fight at the end. So it can be a little awkward for somebody who's throwing around detect evils and not willing to associate with the scum of the earth.
Yeah, I noticed this is a good adventure for neutral or even evil characters. Even the pre-gen characters in the back of Pathfinder, they're all neutral, and there's one who's evil, and that's never been in Pathfinder before.
Yeah, it's really different. This is a really good campaign for people who like to run rogue type characters and get a little seedy.
I'm noticing that, yeah.
Overall, I would, you know, for me, the best part of a campaign is the story that the campaign tells. So one of the big things I do whenever I'm starting out a new campaign with my players is, you know, spend some time developing why we're going through these adventures, build up a story so that it's going to make sense. I think as much as the actual fighting and adventures and role-playing itself, kind of watching the whole thing come together and turn into a full story for the players is as much of the fun for them as anything. And it's a lot of fun for me, too. So probably that would be my advice for beginning a new campaign. Just make it work. Make it fit. Create a world that's believable for them to be in.
That's really cool. All right. Well, I was going to close out with one more question. I noticed that you wrote one chapter of the Age of Worms adventure path.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find the name here.
Kings of the Rift.
Kings of the Rift. I'm running that for one of my groups. Any advice for me as a DM when I run that?
Oh man, that is. Just be ready. That's a tough one. That one gives you a lot of freedom to do a lot of things and put a lot of beat down on your guys, but sometimes freedom can be deadly to a game because it can go in so many directions. You know, after
I don't know. They've been asked for a beat down. I don't know.
It's perfect for them. Anytime they get off track, just throw some dragons or some giants at them.
All right.
If they get into trouble, maybe have the dragons and giants fight each other for a little bit. You really got a lot of options in that one. It's kind of a different feel.
All right, I'm going to look forward to that. All right, well, thanks for coming on the show, Greg. It was nice talking to you. And keep on doing what you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Greg Vaughn, author of Shadow in the Sky. To find out more about Pathfinder and their wide range of D&D products, you can visit paizo.com/Pathfinder. Also, be sure to check out our own homepage, thetomeshow.com, where you can browse past shows, join a discussion in our forums, or visit our Amazon store to purchase the D&D products you've been looking for. This has been The Tome Show Presents Second Darkness. I'm Jeff Wynn, and thanks for listening.